Vaikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vaikatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're opening up a really fascinating book by, well, a master storyteller, Michael Lewis. You probably know him from things like Liar's Poker or Moneyball.
Yeah, Wall Street, baseball.
Yeah.
He has a knack for making complex stuff clear.
Exactly. But this time he tackled something maybe less flashy, but arguably much more fundamental, the actual machinery of the U.S. federal government.
That's right. We're looking at his 2018 book, The Fifth Risk, and it really tries to answer that, you know, sometimes cynical question. What does the government really do?
Besides generate paperwork, right?
Huh? And Lewis dives into these key federal departments and basically shows, look, these functions aren't just vital. They're like the bedrock of our national safety and stability.
And that really gets to the core idea, doesn't it? That the government, first and foremost, acts as the nation's primary risk management organization.
Mm-hmm. It's the silent manager of these huge collective threats. Mm. Things way too big for, say, the private sector alone.
And the book has this real sense of urgency. Lewis is looking into the dangers, the risks that pop up when a new administration comes in, maybe hostile or just, well,
willfully ignorant.
Yeah, willfully ignorant of how this complex machine actually works. He argues that ignoring expertise is, in itself, a huge security threat.
Absolutely. It sets the stakes very high from the beginning.
So before we get into the nuts and bolts of the book, maybe a word on Lewis himself. Why him for this topic?
Well, like you said, he's brilliant at taking these like opaque systems, Wall Street, government agencies, and making them not just understandable, but actually gripping stories.
He was a bond salesman himself, right? Liar's Poker was about his own experience.
Exactly. So he knows big, high-stakes institutions from the inside out. He's sort of trained to look past the surface, find the outliers, understand the culture.
And his real talent, I think, is finding these sort of unsung heroes within the systems, the engineers, the analysts, the career civil servants.
The people actually making things work day to day.
Right. He uses their stories to reveal the hidden truths about how these massive organizations function or sometimes don't function.
And that's precisely the approach he takes here in The Fifth Risk. He skips the high-profile politicians for the most part and goes into the, let's call them, engine rooms of government.
To find these often anonymous people managing America's biggest risks.
Yeah, he takes this system that, let's be honest, a lot of people dismiss as just bloated bureaucracy or corruption.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And shows you the dedicated folks inside who are actually, you know, trying to keep things from falling apart, why we kind of rely on it for survival.
Okay, so let's unpack that central premise then, the fifth risk. What's the government's role in Lewis's view?
So the basic idea is that the government functions like a giant insurance company for the whole nation.
An insurance company? How so?
Well, it's tasked with managing these known potentially catastrophic risks. Lewis identifies four big ones: a nuclear accident or attack,
right?
A major pandemic,
very relevant,
a crippling cyber attack, and large-scale natural disasters. Think of massive hurricanes, earthquakes, things that could really break society.
Right, the kind of risks individuals or even corporations just can't handle alone.
Precisely. And Lewis uses a specific event to frame his whole analysis, really highlighting the fragility of this system. That's the presidential transition between 2016 and 2017.
Ah, okay. Tell us about that.
Well, the outgoing Obama administration, as is customary, had prepared these incredibly detailed briefing materials, thousands of pages, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah, and teams of experts ready to ensure a smooth, safe handover of knowledge and operations. But Lewis's reporting suggests the incoming Trump team, well, it largely didn't show up.
Didn't show up.
Or didn't engage. Ignored briefings, dismissed the experts. Lewis uses this as a stark example of what happens when that institutional knowledge, that expertise, is deliberately sidelined.
Which leads us directly to the title. If those are the first four risks, nuclear pandemic, cyber, natural disaster, what is the fifth risk?
The fifth risk, in Lewis's framing, is the one that makes all the others more likely or harder to manage. It's the risk of project mismanagement on a truly massive scale.
Okay.
It stems from this profound, almost willful ignorance of the machinery of government. It's the danger you don't see coming because you've actively decided not to look, or you've fired the people whose job it is to look.
It's the risk of not knowing what you're doing, essentially, when the stakes are incredibly high.
Exactly. It's the cascade of failures that can happen when you just toss out the instruction manual and the people who wrote it.
Okay, that's a powerful concept. Let's dive into the specific departments Lewis uses to illustrate this. He starts with that troubled transition, right?
Yeah, he really paints a picture of the effort that went into those briefing books. These weren't, you know, political documents. They were operational manuals.
How to actually run things.
Right. How to identify threats, keep critical systems online, ensure continuity. And he gives this incredibly vivid example involving John McWilliams.
Who was he?
He was the chief risk officer in the Department of Energy, the DOE. A guy from private equity, apparently very successful, who took a huge pay cut to do this job.
Okay, so a serious person.
Definitely. And he was ready to brief the incoming team on, well, existential threats managed by the DOE. Things like the security of nuclear weapons.
Right.
The fragility of the U.S. electrical grid. And these unbelievably complex, multi-trillion dollar environmental cleanup jobs from the Cold War.
Stuff you really need to know about on day one.
You'd think so.
Ugh.
But the response Lewis describes was, well, kind of shocking. Minimal engagement. Briefing binders reportedly just ignored or thrown out.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. The incoming people often showed up late, unprepared, or were political appointees with zero relevant background. It signaled this fundamental disconnect, this rejection of the very knowledge needed to manage these massive risks.
That anecdote really sets the stage for looking at the DOE itself, because as you mentioned, most people probably hear Department of Energy and think, what, gas prices?
Yeah, exactly. Or oil drilling. But Lewis just demolishes that misconception. He says, look, the DOE is not primarily about oil and gas.
So what is it about?
It's fundamentally a science and national security agency. Its biggest, most critical job is safeguarding the U.S. nuclear arsenal, something like 6,800 warheads.
Wow. Okay, that's different.
Yeah. And not just weapon security. The DOE is also in charge of the largest environmental cleanup operation in history.
You mentioned Hanford.
Yeah, places like the Hanford site in Washington State.
Yeah.
Massive contamination from producing plutonium during the Cold War. Managing that waste safely costs trillions and requires incredibly specialized expertise over, like, centuries.
So incredibly complex, long-term, high-stakes work.
Absolutely. And the danger of ignorance becomes crystal clear with the appointment story Lewis tells about Rick Perry, the former governor of Texas, as energy secretary.
Oh, I remember he famously couldn't remember the name of the department during a debate, the one he wanted to eliminate.
That's the one. And Lewis reports that when Perry actually showed up for his first briefing, he was genuinely shocked to learn that his main job wasn't promoting fossil fuels, but overseeing the nation's nuclear weapons.
Wait. The person nominated to run the department didn't know nuclear stewardship was the core mission?
Apparently not, according to Lewis's account. And that moment of, like, jaw-dropping realization.
Yeah.
Lewis uses that to encapsulate the fifth risk. It's that terrifying moment when you realize the person in charge doesn't understand or maybe doesn't even respect the fundamental purpose of the job.
Sobering. Okay, let's shift gears from nuclear waste to farming. Lewis also dives into the Department of Agriculture, the USDA, another misunderstood agency.
Totally. If you think DOE is misunderstood, USDA might be even more so. Most people probably associate it with, you know, farm subsidies for big agribusiness.
Corn and soybeans, yeah.
Right. But Lewis argues it's actually one of the country's most crucial social safety nets. And maybe surprisingly, it's America's largest rural investment bank.
Investment bank? How does that work?
Well, Lewis introduces us to people like Kathy Sullivan, a career USDA employee. Her job was managing loan programs that funded essential infrastructure in small rural towns.
What kind of infrastructure?
Things the private sector often won't touch. Hospitals, fire stations, clean water systems, broadband internet. These loans are lifelines keeping rural communities viable.
So it's about community survival, not just crop prices.
Exactly. And think about the scale of its social mission, too. The USDA runs SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, food stamps.
Right. That helps millions of people.
Over 40 million Americans rely on it for food security. So the USDA's reach goes way beyond the Farm Belt. It's deeply woven into the economic and social fabric of the whole country, especially rural America.
Okay, DOE, USDA. What's the third pillar Lewis examines?
He takes us to NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. It's technically part of the Department of Commerce, but it gets its own focus. Hmm. And this section is really about the immense value of public data.
NOAA, that's the weather people, right? National Weather Service.
That's the main part people know. And Lewis points out that NOAA generates this absolutely staggering amount of weather and climate data through satellites, sensors, buoys. It's considered the best in the world.
And this data is important because...
Because it underpins trillions of dollars in economic activity. Lewis spells it out. Airlines planning safe routes, farmers deciding when to plant or harvest, shipping companies navigating oceans, energy companies predicting demand.
Wow, I never really thought about it that way.
Right. It's this foundational layer of information that huge sectors of the economy rely on, and it's provided for free, publicly.
So what's the risk here? Underfunding.
That's a huge part of it. Lewis warns about the danger of chronic underfunding leading to decaying satellites or gaps in data collection. Essentially, the country could start flying blind right when extreme weather events are getting more frequent and costly.
Billions of dollars in damages from storms.
Exactly. And this is where the theme of public good versus private interest really comes into sharp focus. Lewis highlights the controversy around the nomination of Barry Myers to lead NOAA.
Who was he?
He was the CEO of AccuWeather, a major private weather company. And crucially, Myers and his company had a history of lobbying against the National Weather Service, providing its data for free.
Wait, he wanted to lead the agency that provides free data after trying to restrict that same free data?
Mm-hmm. Because his private company wanted to be the one selling that valuable weather information.
That seems like a pretty clear conflict of interest.
Lewis presents it as a prime example of the fifth risk in action, potentially putting someone in charge whose private financial interests are directly opposed to the core public mission of the agency they're supposed to lead.
Okay, so looking across these examples, DOE, USDA, NOAA, what are the big overarching themes Lewis wants us to take away from all this?
Well, theme number one is maybe that reframing of government we talked about earlier. It's not just politics, it's the insurance company for the nation.
Right, the thing that manages risks too big for anyone else.
Yeah, Lewis puts it something like, you only really appreciate it when disaster strikes. It provides the background stability that markets often can't or won't.
Okay, what else?
Theme two is what you might call the invisibility of success. When government actually works well, the nukes stay secure, the food is safe, the weather forecast is accurate, a potential pandemic gets contained early.
You don't notice it.
Exactly. It's invisible. Competence is quiet. And that makes it really easy for people to dismiss it or to think cutting funds won't have consequences. We take that baseline safety for granted.
And that invisibility must feed into the next theme.
It does. Theme three, the war on expertise. Lewis sees this pattern, ignoring scientists, sidelining career professionals, suppressing data as a really fundamental threat. It's not just about policy disagreements. It can be a rejection of objective reality itself.
And that's connected to the fifth risk definition.
Right. The fifth risk is the one you don't see because you've stopped looking. It's what happens when you deliberately choose ignorance, when you devalue the very people whose job it is to know things.
And there's one more key theme, isn't there, about the people themselves?
Yes, absolutely. Lewis makes a point of countering that old stereotype of the lazy, paper-pushing bureaucrat.
Mm-hmm.
He introduces us to people like John Nick Williams at DOE or Kathy Sullivan at USDA, highly competent, often brilliant people who could be making much more money in the private sector, but they choose public service because they believe in the mission. It really humanizes the whole enterprise.
It shows the dedication behind the scenes. So these themes are powerful. How does Lewis suggest we, you know, apply this understanding in our lives? What are the real world takeaways?
Well, one big one is just having a new lens for citizenship, right?
Yeah.
When you hear politicians talking about budget cuts, say to NOAA satellites,
yeah,
you don't just hear saving money. You understand the potential downstream consequences.
Yeah.
Are we blinding ourselves to the next Hurricane Katrina or Superstorm Sandy? It makes you evaluate political rhetoric differently.
It gives you a framework to assess the real stakes beyond the slogans.
Exactly. And the fifth risk idea itself, this danger of willful ignorance in management, that's not just about government. It applies everywhere.
How so?
Think about it. In a business, it could be ignoring quality control reports until you have a massive product recall. In your personal life, maybe it's skipping essential car maintenance until the engine seizes.
Right. Neglecting the boring but crucial functions that prevent system failure.
Mm-hmm. We need to identify and respect those core functions in any system we rely on, whether it's a company, a community group, or the federal government.
And that transition story, that's a huge lesson for any organization, isn't it? About succession planning.
Absolutely. The chaos Lewis describes during that presidential transition is a cautionary tale for any leadership change. It underscores how vital a systematic, respectful handover of knowledge and responsibility is.
You have to preserve that institutional memory.
Or you risk catastrophic failure.
Whoa.
Willful ignorance isn't just a personality flaw in a leader. Lewis argues it's an active danger to the organization's survival.
So, wrapping up, what was the biggest thing that struck you personally from the book, your final takeaway?
For me, it was how powerfully Lewis makes the case for competence. It sounds simple, maybe even dull, but he elevates it. He shows that expertise, dedication, and just basic institutional knowledge, these aren't bureaucratic virtues. They're the silent guardians keeping things running. They're what stand between us and, well, chaos.
Yeah, that really resonates. My final thought is similar. Lewis forces this kind of paradigm shift. We often think the opposite of government is freedom or the free market. But Lewis suggests the opposite of functional government, of competent government, isn't freedom, it's chaos, it's system breakdown. Mm-hmm. And so respecting that machinery, understanding what it actually does, isn't about politics. It's about recognizing what's essential for our collective survival. It's a real plea to pay attention to the quiet work that keeps the lights on. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation,